It's always so interesting to hear what the first thing you like created and sold, and how much was it for?
All right, we got to go back to when I was 14 years old then, because that was my first client. It was a family friend who ran a hunting supply store up in Michigan. That's where I grew up. And it was basically an e-commerce store minus the actual transactional component where you can check out. You just had to call or come in to place an order. My payment for that was a t-shirt.
Welcome to the Small Business Storytellers, the show where we dive deep into the stories and secrets of businesses focused on not just making money, but making the world a better place. My name is Seth Silvers, and my passion is helping businesses grow that are making the world a better place. Every episode, you will hear from transformational leaders and business owners as we dive into what has helped them grow and what has helped them stay true to themselves along the way. Also, every week we are hosting live conversations with our guests on Fireside Chat, where we give you, the audience, the opportunity to ask them your burning questions. So make sure to join us live on Fireside Chat on your mobile device. Let's dive in.
Hey everybody, welcome. Excited for this episode of Small Business Storytellers. If you're new here, my name is Seth Silvers, and on this show, we bring you some of the best business stories that you've probably never heard. And excited today to introduce to you guys somebody you probably already know, which is Kelly. Kelly's been pretty popular here on the Fireside app this week. So Kelly, thanks so much for joining me.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm excited to be on your podcast, and thanks for inviting me up here.
Yeah, absolutely. So as we get started, over the next 30 minutes or so, we're going to dive into Kelly's story, which is super fun and unique just because of the space that she's in. So we're going to dive into her story, some of the challenges that she's had with building a business. Kelly, as we get started, just give those of us that haven't done all the research on you, give us some context for who are you and kind of what does your life look like right now? What are you doing with your life?
Yeah. So my name is Kelly Vaughn. I am the founder and CEO of The Tap Room. It's a Shopify Plus development agency that focuses on custom development solutions for high growth businesses on Shopify and Shopify Plus. I have been in the e-commerce space for almost 7 years now. I've been building websites since I was 11 years old. And currently right now I am sitting in my second office in Atlanta, Georgia. And it's sunny outside, and I really should be sitting outside, but my podcasting equipment is inside.
Yeah, that is one of the problems of once you start actually getting podcast equipment, it's like you're kind of held to where your equipment is. But
exactly.
you sound great. I know you just got some new gear this week, so sound great, and we're excited to be joining you in studio. Did you say that you started building websites when you were 11 years old? I don't want to gloss over that. Can you like tell us a little bit about that? Because that's not how most 11-year-olds.
Yeah, it is. It's definitely not the normal 11-year-old activity. So there's this website called Neopets. Some people might be familiar with it. If you're not familiar with it, it is a website where you could have your own virtual pet and you can dress it and feed it. You can play a bunch of games. And there was a community component to it as well. These communities were called guilds. And I wanted to create my own guild. And in order to customize it, I needed to know basic HTML and CSS. So I asked my dad to buy me a book to teach me how to code. It's called HTML Goodies. I believe you can technically still buy a copy of it. It's incredibly out of date at this point. But that's how I got my start. I started learning how to code when I was 11. And I actually, and we can get into my story a little bit later, but I actually started freelancing when I was 14 years old.
That's amazing. And you wrote you wrote the book on freelancing.
Yes, I wrote a book called Start Freelancing Today, talking about how I got started and how you can get started with freelancing. And it takes you all the way from forming your business to scaling your business. So lots of to cover in there. Again, Start Freelancing Today, and you can visit the website for it at startfreelancing.today, or you can find it on Amazon. It's available as an ebook and an audiobook.
Yeah, which is amazing. And not a lot of people write a book, much less. What was the first platform that you built
So I started building, well, in order to, like, learning how to code, I used Microsoft Front Page to build my first few websites. I dabbled with Dreamweaver when I worked at.
I remember Dreamweaver. Yeah. I remember playing with it.
Yeah,
it was probably middle school. It was probably 8th or 9th grade, and like.
Exactly. Yeah. I used to sell MySpace themes when I was. I guess that would have been. What years was MySpace around? Was it middle school or high school?
Well, okay. Is it kosher for me to ask how old you are?
I'm 30.
Okay, so I'm 30 as well. So I knew we were around the same age. So I know for me, MySpace was, I think it was like 8th and 9th grade. And that was when I remember getting into learning how to, swap out the image text in the code of a MySpace page. And that, I remember doing that in like 8th or 9th grade.
Okay. Yeah, that sounds about right. So it would have been around that time. And I built various communities over time. When I was in, I think, late high school, I was a really big American Idol fan. And I built a fan site for David Archuleta. I think it was like the 5th or 7th season of American Idol.
And oh my gosh.
Yeah, I had like, it was a forum on there with thousands of users. And actually, David Archuleta's dad had reached out to me and was like, hey, love the website. After we do when we start doing the American Idol summer tour, do you want to come to one of the shows and then come backstage and meet him? And I'm like, yes, this is my dream come true. So I still have all of the pictures of when I went backstage for the American Idol post show.
That is amazing. Was it around that time that you started realizing like, okay, this whole web thing is what I want to do?
So that's the funniest thing. I did not want to do development as a career. When I was in high school, I was like, there's no way I would be happy doing this full time as a career. If I was forced to do it, I would grow to hate it. And so I went to college for something entirely different.
What did you end up going to college for?
So after changing my degree choice like 4 times, as one usually does in undergrad, I eventually settled on psychology. And then I continued on from undergrad into grad school and got 2 master's degrees in public health and clinical social work.
Okay, so those are definitely different than development. Yes. Tell me about, did you get into those and then realize you wanted to make more David Archuleta fan sites? Or, what was the transition kind of from, I'm imagining you probably did some work in those arenas?
I did, yes. So my primary focus was on childhood obesity prevention all through the MPH and social work program, more on the public health side and the social work side, which is really funny because I use my social work degree literally every single day now. But I was actually freelancing all through undergrad and grad school because college is really expensive and never really grew to hate it. I ended up getting my first quote unquote real job out of grad school, which was a fellowship at the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. It was a 2-year fellowship program, 1 year, and then they would extend to 2 afterwards, but they wouldn't tell you whether they extended it because federal funding. And they needed somebody who had their master's in public health who also knew how to code. This is not going to come as any surprise whatsoever. I was the only applicant, and they did let me know this 2 weeks into hiring me. And so that was my first full-time job. So as soon as they realized just how well I could code, they're like, well, let's pivot this a little bit more to be less public health and more development at a really low rate. So I did not last long there.
Yeah. And it was so then after that job, did you kind of jump towards like what you knew as far as freelancing and doing some development work?
Yeah. So it was around that time that I discovered Shopify. I discovered it in 2014. And I was still, again, freelancing even while I was at CDC. And I hit this pivot point where my fellowship was paying a stipend of $45,000 a year. That's the cap of what I could make there. I was making more money freelancing on the side than I was through just the fellowship stipend. And we shared cubicles there because, again, government and funding and spacing. And my cube mate was like, Kelly, why are you here? Like, why don't you just do your own thing? You clearly have work coming in. Just do it. So I thought long and hard about it. And once my husband and I got married and I was able to get on his health insurance, that was really the deciding factor for me. Like, can I have health insurance? And so this was September of 2015. And I jumped ship and I quit the fellowship program and I went full time into freelancing.
Okay, this is amazing because my business's birthday is September of 2015.
That's amazing. I love it.
So, same age. We started at the same time. So, and I mean, it was a little more, mine was not as stable of a jump as you. I was, dating my now wife at the time. And, you know, if I would have gotten married, then I probably would have just like continued peanut butter sandwiches for lunch and, you know, just like live out of my car or something. But, that helped me to realize really quickly, like, okay, there's probably got to be some supplemental income while we're building this business thing. And so, you know, I did some different freelancing and jobs along the way, but, the last 5 years has definitely been a journey. I'm curious. I love asking people, like, what was the first thing that you ever like sold online? It's always so interesting to hear what the first thing you like created and sold and how much was it for?
All right. We got to go back to when I was 14 years old then, because that was my first client. It was a family friend who ran a hunting supply store up in Michigan. That's where I grew up. And it was basically an e-commerce store minus the actual transactional component where you can check out. You just had to call or come in to place an order. My payment for that was a t-shirt.
That's hilarious you say that, because oftentimes it's not, you don't get money for your first thing.
Exactly. I still have the t-shirt too. It turns out that my my dad just texted me out of the blue one day and with this picture of this really dirty shirt. And I'm like, why are you sending this to me? He's like, don't you recognize it? And I looked closer and saw the name Taylor's Hunting Supplies on it. And that was the original business. And, you know, he meets up with me and hands me the shirt. It is so like dirty. It's missing a sleeve. And I'm like, what were you doing with this? And it turns out he'd been using it as a dust rag for years. It didn't realize what shirt it was. And so he did his best to clean it, like wash it as many times as he possibly could. And now I have the shirt. So eventually I'm going to frame it because it's basically my first dollar.
Yeah, no, I think that's amazing. And I also think it's kind of amazing that your dad used like one of the, you know, an artifact of your legacy to change his oil.
Exactly.
but I asked that question to another person that they were in kind of the marketing and online sales space, and their first website, they sold for a gun. A gun for a website, which they are in Oklahoma, so it does make sense, but it's always hilarious. What kind of things have you done work for? So that's awesome that you still have the t-shirt, and it'll be fun to see that framed one day.
Yeah, I honestly, to be completely transparent, I lost it. It is somewhere in my house, but I will find it.
Well, there you go. You'll find it. So let's fast forward to now. You've came a long way since, you know, exchanging, being on the t-shirt exchange and switching out shirts for websites. What does your team look like now? Like, give context for the scope of the work that you're doing, because you have several, like you have two podcasts, you have a decent sized team. Like, you're not just a freelancer now, like you have a great business. So give us some scope for what it is you're doing now and how big is your team and different things.
Yeah. So I now have 10 full-time employees. I've got about 10 additional contractors, and I forgot the rest of the questions.
Yeah, just like, I mean, you have two podcasts.
Oh, yes. Yeah,
tell our audience a little bit about those.
Yeah, so I do have two podcasts. One is called Commerce. It's a podcast to help you succeed on Shopify. So it's very merchant focused. I actually co-host that with Rian Beutler, who is also on this app. And I also have a second podcast called Ladybug Podcast. And this is a podcast with me and three other women in tech talking all things tech, career, and code. That one we've been doing since 2019, I want to say. And it's grown really quickly, way faster than I was expecting. But we just recorded an episode on e-commerce today. So, of course, I still get to tie it back into the tap room. I also do a weekly live stream on Twitch with a Shopify employee. We call it Kelly plus Kelly because my name is Kelly and his name is Thomas Kelly. So on brand. And so we're basically live or like building a Shopify store live. So any Shopify developer who's interested in theme development, they can kind of see us in action and watch us actually build out this site. What else do I do?
Yeah, which is amazing. I mean, like in even with your with the tea podcast, what's the name of it again? I can't remember.
It's Commerce Tea.
Commerce Tea. Like you guys do live reviews of sites and stuff. So I think that's an awesome thing about the media. You're showing people what's working and what's not and really showing them your experience. What made you want to be kind of take that more transparent, that more like generous, like I'm going to like kind of give away our knowledge perspective with content as opposed to feeling like you need to like keep it all really close to the chest and only share those secrets with people that are paying you?
There are over a million merchants on Shopify, for one thing. There are so many, and we're talking, you know, plenty of other platforms out there where people are running a business as well, or just trying to get started running a business. When I started the agency, I did not know what in the world I was doing. And I was just making everything up as I go. Now that I've gotten, you know, 7 years into working on e-commerce, there's a lot that I know, and there's a lot that I could share to help other merchants kind of get that leg up without having to, well, first off, quite often people don't have funding to start off with. And 7 years in, I'm not exactly a cheap consultant at this point. And so I would just rather have that information be available so you can actually get a head start, get started, find your first customers, start getting some sales and start to optimize your store. And, you know, the dream would be at some point you grow so much to the point where you're an ideal client for the tap room. There's no point in keeping all that information in.
Right.
I mean, where else is it going to go? It's just going to sit there in my head forever.
Yeah. And I've struggled with that too, because, you know, the vision when I started my company Story On was to help small businesses market with stories, like, and to help them market authentically. So, you know, for the last 5 years, we've spent a lot of it working with anybody and everybody who had a story and wanted marketing and had $5 or more, which isn't a sustainable business model. And so, you know, it took us a while to realize, you know, putting out content is really the best way to like be helping those people that aren't ready to hire you now. But, you know, if they're really intentional for the next year, then they can grow to the place where they are ready. I'd love to hear about that journey for you. Like, have you, you know, it sounds like you're probably not the cheapest in town. You're probably not for the people that are, you know, for the people that are looking for, you know, a $10 Shopify site. Like, has pricing and figuring out just like how to know your value in the marketplace, has that been a challenge for you over the years?
Without a doubt. Yes. I have always undercharged, and this has been a constant battle. Even now, as I'm moving up market, I still feel like I'm not charging enough. And I'm like a complete open book when it comes to sharing my rates. And again, there are so many merchants on Shopify that I don't feel like it's really tough competition, because there's enough work to go around for everybody. So I would rather kind of set the stage with, you know, whatever I can share to help other agencies grow as well. I did not have that. I want them to have that. So, I mean, I remember when I charged $3,000 for my first Shopify build. It was a custom website. This business is now doing over $20 million annually. And this was 3 years ago. And, you know,
speaking
value-based pricing, that's terrible return for me. And now, you know, our minimum engagement is 50,000.
Yeah. Yeah. How did you, like, were there some moments, maybe some failures, maybe some lost contracts, maybe it was, you know, realizing you took on a $50,000 project and only charged them $3,000. Like, what were some moments that helped you to get to that place where you're like, I know our value and I know what we're worth?
I think one of the biggest turning points was, if somebody believes that we can do the work, I'm the one who's holding us back by making or with for not making more money. I'm the one who's setting those rates, and they're more than happy to pay more. And I think there have been times when we've lost projects, we've lost bids because we did not charge enough. And if we're not charging what they think we should be charging, they're going to see us as a budget agency, and we're not going to be good enough to do the work, basically. So now I'm kind of taking it from the other perspective, and I'm like, I'm just going to keep on increasing my rates. If I get a yes on a proposal, bump up the price next time. We can't possibly take on every single project. We get so many inbound leads. If everyone said yes, one, we're not charging enough, and two, I'm going to have to somehow find the team members to actually get the work done.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. You mentioned inbound leads, and this is completely unrelated to this, but your URL for your website is taproom.com. I'm curious what the highest amount that you have been offered for that URL is from some kind of brewery or beer
company.
Nobody
has actually offered to buy it.
Okay.
I'm
sure one day it'll happen, but I think that's a great URL that you have.
Thank you. Yeah, I was at a McKellar bar in Copenhagen, and as most good ideas come from drinking, I was like, why don't I call it the Tap Room? Like, call my agency the Tap Room, because, you know, you're exchanging creative ideas at tap rooms, and you create some, you make some magic. I mean, there's so many good things that come out of tap rooms. And so I looked it up, and it was available for resale for like $2,500. And I'm like, I'm going to bid $2,000, see what happens. And they're like, okay. So I bought the domain for $2,000.
That's amazing. Well, I hope that sometime in the next year that I can come to Atlanta. I have a couple of clients in Atlanta, and we can sit down and have a conversation in a tap room somewhere.
Oh, without a doubt. There's actually also a coffee shop called Taproom Coffee in Atlanta. And I always feel a strong desire just to like work out of there for a day, just to be on brand with where I am and what business I'm running.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I love it. I love the name. I love the concept behind it. I'm curious, Kelly, have there been any moments where, you know, I don't want to say you've thought about quitting, but there's times where I've found in my entrepreneurial journey where it's like, you know what? These are the days when people quit, where you can like, you can feel it. Like you can kind of like see, like, these are the hardships where like, I can see, or this is where some people would turn around. Have there been some of those moments for you where it's, where things have just been challenging and you've really wondered if keeping going is worth it?
Yeah, absolutely. Last year, and towards the end of last year, of course, last year was pretty difficult for everybody. But we actually went from having 3 full-time employees at the end of 2019 to having 8 at the end of 2020. So it was a pretty significant year of growth for us. As we all know, e-commerce just boomed in 2020. As a result, with growing the team came growing pains. And I hit a pretty rough patch in October, November, December, just the fourth quarter of the year, where things were falling behind. I made some bad hiring decisions. I had some unhappy clients for one reason or another. And it was a lot emotionally just to deal with what's happening with my team internally and also what's happening externally with the clients. And there were so many times that I texted my mentor and I was like, I mean, I could literally go get hired at Shopify today. Why don't I just do that?
Why didn't you?
I've always been an entrepreneur at heart. I'm good at running a business and I thoroughly enjoy it.
Yeah.
There are bad days that come with anything. But I can't picture myself working for somebody else.
Yeah. Why is that? Like, why? I'm always curious to why people like me and others have chosen the entrepreneurial journey. Cause I mean, there's times where it's for sure not the easiest. It just doesn't make sense sometimes, but I think that everybody has reasons behind what we do. So why is this the life that you're excited about building, of, you know, owning your own business, being an entrepreneur, having that freedom?
I think a lot of it for me is security, which sounds kind of funny as like as an entrepreneur, the last thing you feel when you're starting a new business is secure. But where I am now, I'm owning my own security. I'm creating that own security. I'm creating jobs, and I'm creating that security for my team as well, for them to grow, for them to, you know, improve in their careers, raise families, whatever it is that they're doing. And that gives me so much fulfillment. And so just owning, having a full ownership over what I'm doing has been one of my biggest driving factors.
Yeah. Have you seen, like, what kind of fulfillment have you came now that you're starting to see that? Like, I mean, I imagine with this scale that you guys are at that, yes, there's challenges, but you're also like seeing some of the rewards of trucking your own journey. So tell me about, like, how has it been fulfilling for you?
I am financially driven with goals. So I love hitting, you know, new financial goals, new revenue goals for my company. So I get fulfillment out of that. But I also get fulfillment out of being able to take, like, we've been really fortunate to be growing quickly, both in size and in revenue. And I can actually give back to the community in, you know, financially even. And I feel like that is something that it's something I've always wanted to do. And I finally feel like I'm in a position where I'm able to do that. And that's something that's really, you know, really important to me. We're actually working on building out a full junior developer training program so we can start actually, you know, hiring self-taught, hiring second career boot camp grads and giving them that real life work experience as a developer and train them up for everything they need to know. Obviously, we'd love to have them stay on with us, but they would be successful wherever they go because they've now been trained to work in the full environment. So these are the kinds of things that really give me fulfillment as being an entrepreneur and where we're at now and having the success that we've had, being able to, you know, have these opportunities, but really run with them.
That's amazing. And I think that you're almost looking back to where you were as an 11-year-old building websites, as a 14-year-old selling, you know, starting to freelance. Is that some of the motivation behind that? Like wanting to give other young people some of the resources, maybe at an earlier age?
Without a doubt. Yeah. I think there's a lot that can be done. And there's so many more resources available now than there were when I was learning how to code. But I think most of, like, for me, a lot of people never realized that programming was even an option for them, something that they could learn and grow and become good at and love, honestly. And I want to be able to show them that this is actually a career opportunity for them, regardless of age, really.
Right. Yeah. How hard is it to get started? Like, can 15-year-olds get started doing it? Can 65-year-olds get started programming and really creating value through programming that then they can monetize?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, there are so many like free coding resources online that you can get started with. And they're very, you get immediate feedback from any of them. And so you're able to watch yourself learn. My mother-in-law will occasionally pop onto one of those, like Code Academy, for example, and just start taking some kind of programming lesson. I mean, it does not matter whether, as you said, whether you're 15 or whether you're 65, these tools are available for anybody to learn. It's absolutely something that can be learned.
Yeah, I think it's amazing how, you know, like we were saying when we were young and both on MySpace, like I remember feeling like I was kind of like a tech wizard because I could like customize my MySpace. And I remember that was the first time I like got an idea of what HTML code was. And now there's just so many more opportunities for kids. Like that was me, you know, 14, 15, and I didn't pursue a career in coding or development or anything. But I remember kind of being really intrigued at this idea of customizing. And it's pretty mind-blowing in the last 15 years, like how many more educational resources there are for young people. When you were younger, like really getting to hone your skills and all this, like what did you wish that you had? What were some resources that you're like, man, I wish that I had that when I was 16 years old?
I think one of the things that I really missed out on when I was younger is having actual projects to work on. I think the resources that exist now provide inspiration for what you can build and how you can run with it, even just taking a simple idea that somebody else proposes and being able to build an app or build a website or something like a tool just based on somebody else's idea that's available. I also lacked the community that's around learning how to code. Again, being 11 years old, I was not on Twitter. So I couldn't, you know, I didn't have resources to just reach out and ask questions and get that feedback. And now there's such a strong community around learning how to code. I absolutely love what's available now.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's amazing. And yeah, just seeing what's available, and there's so much free stuff too. There's a lot of great, you know, if you're wanting to put in resources, there's those opportunities, but there's so many free opportunities as well. I'm curious if you're into the gaming scene at all, because that's one area where I've heard like there's teenagers that are making insane amounts of money that are like coding items for Minecraft and for games these days. And so, yeah, I'd love to hear your thoughts on that and kind of explain a little bit, like help us understand how that works.
Yeah. So this is definitely not my area of expertise. When it comes to gaming, I have a Nintendo Switch and I occasionally play the old games that I loved to play when I was younger, like Spyro and Crash Bandicoot, the occasional Zelda. But yeah, so these games that have been created that are kind of like open world creativity, they've created a marketplace and the tools that you need for anybody to go in and create objects within these games. And you're able to actually sell these through like a marketplace, for example. And other people who are playing the games are able to purchase those to use in their own world, quote unquote. And yeah, you can really make so much money from it. Just, you know, there's depends on what you're making and when you get in and how unique your items are, how useful they are, things like that. But there's an actual market for it.
Yeah. Do you often look back at, you know, at the marketplaces that are available now, think like, man, if I was 15 or if I was in college, then I would definitely be, you know, coming up with some more creative solutions to be getting paid from my dorm room.
Without a doubt, you know, looking back at some of the things that have been created that are now successful companies as well, like I thought about doing that a long time ago. I just didn't maybe have the skill set at the time. But I think it's so cool to see as kids, especially just taking these opportunities to explore their entrepreneurial side.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we have some questions starting to come in. So we have Terry and Trent on stage. So Terry, if you want to go ahead and unmute yourself, would love to know what question you have for Kelly.
Hi, Seth. Hi, Kelly. Can you hear me?
Sure can. Hello.
Yep.
I'm really enjoying your show. Thanks for doing this. And you both sound great, by the way, audio wise. I know we've been learning how to get the best audio with the new format. I wanted to it's not really a question. I just wanted to comment and say, I appreciate, Kelly, so much your generosity and the information that you're sharing, especially with Prisa. I find it really refreshing and it's actually very useful information, but I really kind of share both of your philosophies that to be able to share the information that we weren't able to get freely and clearly. When we were putting our businesses together, it's just important to share it. And I really appreciate that you're doing it. I'm very impressed and appreciative.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I definitely think it's important to share these things. I mean, I speak with agency owners of, you know, multinational agencies, and I'm like, how are you charging for this? What are you paying yourself? What are you paying your employees? And they share this information with me, which I think is incredibly important because I want to make sure that I'm scaling appropriately as well. And I can learn from those who are, you know, two, three, four steps ahead of me, learn from their mistakes, learn from their successes, and follow that same path. And so I want to do the same thing for those who are, you know, two, three, four steps behind me so they can also become alongside me and have that same success I'm enjoying.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's invaluable.
Kelly, earlier in your show, In the show that you broadcasted earlier, we talked a little bit about value-based pricing.
Yeah.
Can you just share for a few minutes and kind of based off of what Terry said, like share a little bit about your perspective on why companies, individuals, freelancers should not be really going after discount pricing, but should really be like pricing our services based off of value.
Yeah. So for those who are unfamiliar with the concept of value-based pricing, you're pricing based on the perceived value of what the other party is going to be getting from it. So I would not be charging the same thing for a small mom and pop knitting store down the street from me compared to what I would be charging a company like Coca-Cola to build out a brand for them. They're going to financially benefit from what I'm building to a much greater scale. They're going to have a larger budget to work with. And so by basing your pricing around the value of what you're delivering, you're able to serve the smaller businesses while also still being profitable and scale your own business by working with these larger businesses as well. This is something that I've been really working on practicing in my day to day, in signing on as we move up market, especially we're working with larger businesses with much larger budgets and kind of putting it in the perspective of, again, this kind of goes back to making sure I'm actually charging enough. Is increasing my rates with them, and I don't really get pushback, which also, leads me to believe that maybe I'm still not charging enough.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Terry, did that kind of answer or kind of respond to your comment, or is there any other questions that you have?
Well, it did, but it opened up a new question for me, which is interesting because a lot of my clients, like yours, I'm in the music business, but some are very high profile and have bigger budgets, and others are independent artists who don't have the same kind of budgets. But the amount of time that it takes to work with them is still the same. Of course, I always try to be open, budget wise, so that I can work with anybody that I want to work with at whatever point of their career that they're at. But I guess my question is, isn't it the same amount of work when you're doing a mom and pop as you're doing a corporation with a $50,000 budget?
It really depends. I actually find the corporations to tend to require more of our time.
Okay.
There tend to be a lot more meetings, additional sign off that's required, additional revisions. We often have more complex work coming through that as well, like building a custom app for a store, for example, versus just like a basic Shopify setup. So we are able to charge accordingly in that sense as well. Having so many employees offering health insurance, the retirement, all this does add up in terms of our overhead. So I have to be cognizant of who we're signing on the smaller side as well to make sure that our work is still profitable and I'm actually able to, make payroll.
Thank you for answering that.
Yeah, sure thing.
Yeah, Terry, thanks so much for jumping on stage. We're going to go ahead and move to Russ. Russ, thanks for joining. What question do you have for?
Hi. Welcome. Hi, Kelly. Hi, Seth. I've really thoroughly enjoyed this conversation. I did have to jump off for a conference call, unfortunately, but I will be listening to the replay. You touched on a few things I have questions on, so I'm going to just focus to like one or two. First of all, Kelly, what a cool backstory you have. Coding at 11. I just love that dad ruining the first dollar story. That was just a lot of fun. I have a question for you real quick. I'm designing a website and I need your font advice. Should I go with Railway or Bleeding Cowboy?
Somebody just listened to a
episode. And somebody's tuning in while walking dogs too, so I apologize, guys. Real quick on the value-based billing. Boy, that is really relevant to me. I've been trying to crack the code on that myself. I'm a ghostwriter, an editor, and produce podcasts and other media, and I'm exactly the same way. I like working with the little guys, but I don't want to, they don't have the huge budgets. And I'll tell you, when I joined my first PR firm out of journalism, my boss sat me down and said, Russ, this is the holy grail. If you can help me crack this, we will be successful. And we never figured out how to get out of just regular standard hourly billing. He wanted to do value-based. So I thought that's a really interesting topic. My question is, I work with a teen. I've talked about him on Fireside Chats before. And he's got an interest in fashion, and like he's lined up like an hourly job where he can like pay his bills, and he wants to maybe set up like an online marketplace where, I guess starting off, he'd be going to thrift stores and just like picking through good items, you know, like brand, you know, label items, for example, and setting up a little e-commerce store. And I don't have any way of knowing like if that's a thing I should encourage and if that's realistic and if that's a good idea. And if so, like where he would start. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I actually do. So particularly in the thrifting apparel side of things, you don't necessarily have to start your own Shopify store for this. There are actually tools that exist online or services that exist online that would be perfect for this. Poshmark is one that's really, really popular in selling apparel. And I actually see the same people who are successful on Poshmark also sell their clothes on eBay as well. I learned an interesting fact about eBay the other day, as we all kind of associate eBay with these auctions. Only 20% of their listings are now auctions. Everything else is buy it now.
That's wild. I would have never thought that. I'm curious, kind of as a follow-up with that, Russ, can you help us? Well, as a follow-up to Russ's question, Kelly, can you help us understand when does somebody need like a custom solution versus should they just get like, you know, the Shopify plugin on their WordPress site, or should they ever do that? Like, help us understand kind of like the stages of I'm selling things online and when do I need to like actually hire somebody like you?
Yeah. So the beauty of Shopify is that they've got, it's a very accessible platform for getting started, and their documentation is really great and their customer service is really great. So you're actually able to get up and running. If you're looking to sell anything, it's a great place to start. The only reason why I wasn't really strongly encouraging it on the thrifting clothes side of things is just because there are actual services and like marketplaces that exist that really, really support that space. You could absolutely be successful at having a Shopify store as well if you wanted to go that route. But then, of course, you are going to be looking at dealing with the legal and accounting side of things, making sure you're charging sales tax where it needs to go, dealing with shipping, making sure your policies are all set. So just some things to kind of be cognizant of if you do decide to take that path. In terms of, you know, asking for help or where you should get started, Shopify, you mentioned having Shopify on a WordPress site. Shopify, this is not well known. They have a light plan that's $9 a month that allows you to create what are called buy buttons that lets you create products with Shopify. It generates a button for you to embed on any website. So if you're already on WordPress and you just want to add some links to purchase some things, you're able to do that. And then it takes you to Shopify's checkout to actually complete the purchase, which is great because Shopify's checkout is known for being performance. It's known for being secure. It's trusted. So you get that added benefit of the Shopify trust badge while still keeping your store elsewhere. I, of course, love seeing Shopify storefronts as a whole. And there are so many really great Shopify themes in the Shopify theme store that you can either install for free or purchase. And they're anywhere from $0 up to, I think the most expensive theme I've seen is like $450, not on the Shopify theme store, but it's a really great place to start. And honestly, even merchants doing millions of dollars annually, they still don't necessarily need a custom theme unless there is a very strong reason to go custom. The beauty of Shopify themes is that it provides you with a really nice starting point without having to reinvent the entire wheel and design the entire site from scratch, rebuild the entire site from scratch. You have access to all of the template files already. So a developer can go in and be like, hey, this is what I want to start with, but I want to change the way this is laid out and I want to add this feature. And you can do all of that.
Yeah, I think it's amazing. Again, what's just available. It was so much more challenging to, you know, to kind of solve the same problems 10 years ago. And now there really is solutions, no matter where you are, whether you're just starting. And that, I didn't know about that button solution, but that's amazing. There's actually a client that I have that I think something that simple is probably what they need.
Exactly.
And yeah, again, having that security of actually going through Shopify as opposed to, you know, people want to know that things are secure. In the last like 10, 15 minutes of this interview, again, want to remind anybody that wants to come and ask a question. We got Trent who's getting ready to come up here. I'm curious to ask you, Kelly, you've been an entrepreneur for 5 years. Give us one or two things that if you could rewind in time and just drop a little bit of knowledge in your brain for your first year of business? Like, what knowledge do you wish you had 5 years ago as a business owner that you now have now?
The first thing that I would absolutely tell myself is to increase your rates. Make the connections with other agencies as well. I think that'd probably be the second one, or other freelancers. There's always been such a strong community, especially within Shopify. And I think really putting myself and inserting myself into the community has allowed me to make really strong connections with other agencies, which they refer work to me. I refer work out to them. I'm making these really strong relationships that have, you know, really evolved to growing my business and them growing their business alongside me as well. So those would probably be the two things. And I think if I were to give myself a third, it would be get an office space sooner. I know we're living in like a remote work world now, but I love having my own office.
Yeah. Yeah, that's awesome. That's great input. Oh, bummer. We just had Trent up here and then he just, something
might
just happened.
Might reappear because it looks like he may have accidentally closed the app or left the
room. Okay. He's, yep. He's coming up. Okay. I want to welcome Trent.
Yes, this is Trent. I'm completely new here right now.
To Fireside.
Welcome.
So Trent, welcome to Fireside.
So I'm Trent, obviously. Now I've run an agency for almost 15 years now. But the question I had, which is something I go back and forth about, is the thought process behind doing a, when you're looking at a single product or like a single product with a couple different upsells for e-commerce. Mm-hmm. And pushing that towards whether you're doing a funnel style or something like Shopify. And I would be curious to get your thoughts on that.
Yeah. So I am always going to be, if you're doing anything e-commerce related, I'm always going to say pro Shopify. I'm a little biased there, obviously. But one of the things I think that's really great about, even for single product sites, one of the biggest drivers of traffic to the site is going to be content. And building on top of Shopify while also adding the additional informational pages, educational section, adding a blog, will continue to build up the domain authority for that website and really allow you to get that additional traffic to obviously eventually hopefully get them to purchase and increase that conversion rate.
Gotcha. Okay. That makes sense because I'm not overly familiar with Shopify. In all fairness, I come from the other side, the funnel side, where you're doing more one-off marketing.
Right.
So do you still have, and maybe this is my naivety, but do you still have the ability to do all the additional upsells and all that inside Shopify?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And it's okay. Something that we do all the time, both cross-sells and upsells.
Very cool. That was it. That was my big, that was my question.
Yeah. Thanks for asking.
Cool. Yeah, that's awesome. Thanks for jumping up and asking a question, Trent. Yeah. And if anybody else has a question that they want to ask Kelly, kind of as we start to wrap this up, feel free to raise your hand, come up on stage. Kelly, what are you looking forward to, like with your business, you know, in the next year or so? Like what are some of your plans and kind of things that you have your eyes focused on?
One of the things I'm really looking forward to is actually getting to meet my team in person. Meet for the first time. I mean, we hired so many people last year and this year that I've never met any of them in person. And we're a fully remote company. Wow. So, you know, people are living all over the US, got a couple contractors in Canada, got a couple contractors in the UK, and it'd be really great to meet everybody.
Yeah, absolutely. Atlanta is a cool place to go. We have some friends in Atlanta. I find myself there once or twice a year, and there's a lot of cool things to do in that city. Not to mention, you guys have been like the center of the universe for the last 9 months in American history.
Yeah, I've never met so many people who are familiar with the counties of Georgia.
I know, right? It's funny how things can change. Well, Kelly, this has been wonderful. And for anybody that's listening live or to the replay of this, make sure you go and check Kelly out. Follow her everywhere you can. Listen to her podcast. If you're interested in, I would say, like almost just understanding more about the Shopify and the tech space, like as I've been looking at your content, I just think you do such a good job of simplifying it and kind of making some of these things that are really complex, kind of boiling them down and making them more easy to digest. So, Kelly, what's the best way that people can get in touch with you? And do you have any shows or any things in particular that you, you know, you want to kind of highlight right now?
Yeah. So you can find me on Twitter at KVLLY. You can find me on LinkedIn at, well, LinkedIn, just Kelly Vaughn is my name on there. The tap room is thetaproom.com. You can also find my, if you need to reach out to me directly, my personal website is kvlly.com as well. I think those are the most places you can find me. Again, Commerce Tea, we publish new episodes every Tuesday, and we do a show on Fireside every Thursday at 1 p.m. Eastern. And for Ladybug Podcast, we publish new episodes every Monday.
Awesome. Well, Kelly, this has been wonderful. I look forward to listening to more of your Commerce Tea shows and just getting to see where your journey is going, especially as it sounds like you have more opportunity to give back in some of the ways that you've really wanted. So thanks so much for sharing your story. I really appreciate you coming on here today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much for listening to the Small Business Storytellers. If you've wanted to start a podcast and have been wondering if you can use podcasting to grow your business, but don't know where to start, I'd love to talk. Head to successwithstories.com/podcast to learn exactly how to launch, grow, and profit from a podcast for your business. Again, that is successwithstories.com/podcast. Thank you so much for listening. If you like this episode, share it with someone you know who would also like it. If you want to be a guest on the podcast or know someone who would be a great guest on the show, let me know. Thank you, and we will see you next time on the Small Business Storytellers.